way back in the early 20-teens, a city fella from Minnesota and a wannabe cowpuncher from small town Iowa came together to swap tall tales over the airwaves. They made lots of friends along the way, but even more enemies. By chance, they made acquaintance with a sodbuster from over the other side of the county, who felt obliged to butt in on their little show and give them the what fors from time to time. After nigh on a decade of pointless blathering, one thing led to another, and they were unceremoniously tossed out on their ear from their little radio show. Eventually, this ragtag group found their way back together and decided to start a little podcast we like to call Dutch by Association.
Well, Mitch and I will come in. Thank you. Sound good? Appreciate you.
So, normal episode.
Yep.
Okay.
What number are we?
33? I think I threw away said 31, but the number's always wrong, so I don't know.
It's not always wrong.
Occasionally
wrong. I could probably
wrong.
Look it up. So,
episode 32.
We are on, this would be 32, yes.
Okay. So it was right?
You were right.
It worked.
Oh, stopped to watch, right, twice a day, something. Yeah, so if we sound a bit disheveled, is because we're kind of doing this piecemeal. It's Wednesday evening. So first of all, Aaron has an unexcused absence from church, and he's going to have to rectify that here after a while.
It's a way to call him out.
No, the good Dutch Reformed takes summer off.
Oh, sure. Because you got field work to do, right?
That's exactly why we take summer off.
Take care of that.
Because we're beer to drink at the lake.
Yeah, we're walking beans.
That's right.
That's why.
Well, and speaking of old school agriculture, why don't you introduce our guest?
Yeah, we've got with us here today, we've got Andy Getting. Andy is from Getting's Garden, and that's going to be familiar to some of our listeners and maybe not to others, but what they
it's
are
going to be
is
familiar to everybody. Everybody knows Getting's Garden.
I would say so, but maybe not our listeners in Germany.
Oh, yes.
Do we all know the jingle? Can we sing the jingle? You guys know it?
There's a jingle?
Have you
ever listened to your own radio station you used to work at?
No.
I tried,
no.
tried when to make
we, a point When Wayne and
to.
I left the studio, it was
Do
done.
You want me to do my best?
Yes, please. Yes.
Yep.
At Getting's Garden, you pick them, you'll love them.
That brought it back. I remember that.
That was close enough, right?
Yeah, it's very good, actually.
You're thinking of re-recording it now. But with Mitch.
Wow.
Wayne, let's...
You would remember it if you heard me sing it. You know that.
So, Andy, you've got big things going on at Getting's Garden. Normally, the middle of June, late June, you're opening up for strawberry picking. This year, no different, I'm assuming. Weather shaping up fine for strawberries?
Yep, things are looking good. You know, middle of June, 14th through the 18th, somewhere in there, probably be the first day this year.
So at what point do you know this is the day we're going to open?
You know, it's always a tough call because Mom, Dad, and I are always like, what days are going to be? What days are going to be? And, you know, basically, I go out and walk the fields, judge on whether there's enough to be picked in a certain area, and usually it's the night before we just announce on Facebook now.
And then all of your employees are like, oh, crap, I guess I have to work tomorrow.
Yeah, I usually send out a text message at 9 o'clock saying, yep, bring your, proper apparel because we're open.
Yep, sure, so. Game on. Andy, so for those of us like myself who are transplants, give us a little bit of the backstory and the history of how a strawberry patch all of a sudden happened in the middle of Sanborn.
Right. Well, Dad started in 83. It was the year of the peck. I don't know if you guys remember
the year
that.
Of the what?
The peck, where they did, they tried to raise less crop in the United States that year. So he signed for the peck program, and he planted a bunch of oats that year instead of corn. And he had his uncle actually raises strawberries and apples down in Iowa River. And so he spent the summer, some time down there. I'm not sure if it was whole summer or not, but got to, work in the orchard and the strawberry patch. And that year he had some extra time and thought, he was talking with his uncle and said, well, I'm put out an acre. And so he did in 83. First year we picked it was 84. And he'll tell you the first year he did it was his best year. He had the best yield.
Really?
Things went really good.
At that point, Don said, we're doing this forever.
Yeah.
It's only getting better from here.
Forget this conventional stuff. Strawberries, as far as the eye can see.
Yeah. So climate was obviously different then, but yeah. it started then, and it's been slowly growing. And we've grown a lot, you know, since 2010 to 2021. Now we've done a lot of growth since then. But
so, as a percentage, how much of the fields that you farm, or how much of the acres that you farm, are now dedicated to actual strawberries?
Right. Well, yeah, very small percentage compared to what we farm. Like, we have about 1,300 acres, and 45 of it's dedicated to the strawberry farm. So,
but that's a lot of strawberries, though. 45 acres.
When you're walking on, or you're on your hands and knees crawling,
mm-hmm.
I can't bend over that far, so I'm crawling on my hands and knees to pick strawberries.
Bull crap! You're not doing any of that.
I'm sending my wife
and kids.
You're
sending the wife and kids. Let's be real here.
I'm no dummy. Bring home the berries.
But it sounds like this has kind of been an evolution. You know, you start to grow, and then now it seems like you're taking yet another step forward. Tell us a little bit about that.
Right. Well, this year we've done Gettings Backyard. We added that to our farm, and what that is a agritourism thing for families. And you know, that we've added a mega slide. It's called the mega slide.
The mega slide.
So, yep.
Ooh, that was good.
Yeah, I like that.
Really good.
Yep. Yeah, just completed last week.
Almost better than my jingle.
Yeah. We need to record that after this, by the way, too.
A dog barfing would be better than whatever the heck that was.
I wasn't warmed up, okay? Come on. Give me a break.
So then who does quality control when it comes to these? Are you? So I'm sure you've personally done all of the activities to make sure that they are of the utmost quality.
Yeah. Well, I've got kids. My sister's got kids, and... we had some high school guys start last week, and they rode the slide, and that was pretty cool. So, it kind of solidified for me. At least we're going to have a wide range of people that are going to ride it.
What are other things available at the market other than just a flat of strawberries?
Yeah, well, we've got three sizes of pre-picks available now. We've got 6-quart, 4-quart, 2-quart. So, if you don't want to spend the money for a 6-quart, you can buy 2, or if you can't make jam or whatnot. And then,
but the jam you guys have is phenomenal. And we still actually have... I don't know if I should still have it or not, but some of the strawberry syrup.
Oh, yep, yep.
Is that okay to have a year later?
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure it's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I sure hope so, because I go out to the market and steal it and take it home. So.
How many people does it take to put this operation on?
Oh, during the season, I think we employ about 30, 35 people.
Really?
So, yep. And like right now, we're probably a staff of 7 or 8 until the season starts. So
where online can we find you?
It's gettingsgarden.com, or check us out on Facebook, TikTok.
TikTok.
Yeah.
Really? Are you a TikToker?
No, actually, I'm not. But my sister started it, so we're rolling with it. So
yeah.
Are you featured in any, like, doing any dance moves or anything like that we might find on the Gettings Gardens TikTok?
I don't, not right now, but I guess you gave me an idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, we're trying to get people to come.
Yeah. Keep that in mind. That's true.
Oh, no, if you're going to see him make an ass out of himself, come on now.
Well, if you're looking for something to do this summer... and it's within not very long amount of time, within a couple weeks here. Head on down to Gettings Garden, visit my friend Andy, his family, all the help that they've got there. A bunch of good people, friendly people, lots of different things to do, and you can stay there the whole day.
Andy, thanks for taking the time, my friend.
Yep, thank you guys.
Appreciate you. Back with more after this. All right, welcome back to segment number 2. We actually have a very special guest that's joining us today. This is one of those stories that's started on Twitter, which is actually kind of how we got in contact with J.D. Shulton. And it does go, it is something to state, and you'll hear when because we recorded the interview yesterday, you'll hear we talk about Republicans and Democrats. We do bring up party affiliation, and actually Rob has some strong opinions about it. But we were able to corral Rob Sand on his journey here through Northwest Iowa, making his every person stop. And I see that it was 13 people made the trip to the Sheldon skate park after we talked to him.
That might be every Democrat in Sheldon, though.
That could be, but would you think that in an office like auditor, that your party affiliation would matter?
Because I mean, because that's got to be like the attorney general, right? You know, it's like you're just you're not a it's not a party line thing. It's just you follow facts.
It matters same way it matters to you on the city council that if you have the wrong one next to your name, certain people. Well, I like Wayne and I agree with him on things, but F him. He has a D next to his name.
He's a known Democrat. I got called that, and I'll talk about that coming up. But before I forget, though, before we get into it, this was such an easy interview, and he was just such a nice guy that we didn't really even like start the interview. So this interview starts in a very haphazard way, or as Aaron likes to say, you know, we would drop the transmission. We started by explaining to Rob our background and why we're doing this show in the first place. And so it's going to cut into Aaron explaining his first days on air and how that affects his wife and children, or how it affected his wife and children. And
everybody turned out fine.
Yep. And it started with child number three, and there was still a child number four to be had.
That's right.
So all's well that ends well. But okay, now this
radio show went through two of them being born, so I just left my wife with
his first day on the radio was right.
I dropped
after
two kids off at my wife at the hospital in the maternity ward, because the day before she just had our third child
and said, I'm gonna go do this
super neat thing called the morning show.
Yeah,
she's like, great, I'm gonna do this super neat thing called childbirth.
Yep.
glad we're evening things out.
Well, and it was a C-section, so she was like in recovery.
Oh man.
Yeah. Just turn the TV on, find PBS, we'll be fine. Be fine.
And were they fine? Did they just watch?
Yeah, PBS? I think so. Okay. I think
because typical
as usual. Well, he was still around to make a fourth kid, so I'm guessing it turned out.
The problem with that is like sometimes PBS works, and then sometimes our kids, they'll get half an hour into a movie and just be like, I'm bored. Can we go do something else?
Yeah.
And there's a piece of me that's proud, because I'm like, cool, you're not just like wanting to zone out. And there's also a piece of me that's like, crap.
I need you to zone out a little bit.
Yeah, I really needed you to do nothing but breathe for a little while. And the problem with that arrangement then is like, if she's in recovery and all of a sudden PBS isn't cutting it anymore,
then we call you push the button and the nurses come. Come on.
Yeah.
That's right. For all the nurses out there, no, you're not babysitters. He was joking.
We love you. We appreciate you.
Yeah. So Wayne and I, this is an upgrade, because now rather than from 6 to 8 in the morning, sometimes it's 6 to 8 at night.
Yep. And we replace our coffee with beer, and it's a good time.
There you go.
And we added Mitch, who was a frequent contributor to the morning show. We got texts a lot from listeners, and Mitch was the number one texter. We brought him along.
All right.
Welcome along, buddy. Proud distinction.
Yeah, and Mitch is a tractor salesman, so
okay.
he can talk farm.
And you're from out in the county, is that right?
Yeah, I grew up across the county. I live here in Sheldon, though.
Okay,
so, all right. Yep.
But yeah, he's from originally from Sutherland.
From Sutherland.
We call them hill people.
I think the hill
people. He represents all people in Iowa, Wayne.
Oh, I suppose.
Even hill people.
Even the hill people.
I think if anyone here is a hill person.
Yeah, Decorah,
from
right?
Decorah.
Yeah,
that, I guess that would be me.
That would.
I went to Hawkeye Point yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Were you just amazed?
Disappointing.
Was that a little bit of a letdown? Well, I said to the guy that brought me there, I was like, this is very strange, because I'm from a place in Iowa that has hills. And you're telling me that essentially this is the highest point, and literally there's like nothing to see in any direction. It's all flat.
Yeah.
Which is its own form of beautiful, but just surprising.
Oh, you were looking for a lookout point. I feel like I use that same line on a girl in high school, but maybe we'll edit that out. But
did you guys know my buddy from growing up, Justin Albers, while he was in town here?
Oh yeah, yep.
Oh,
all right. He got to move back to Decorah.
Right.
Actually, I was driving through my old neighborhood when I was back in April. Did not realize that he had moved into the house he had moved into, and I'm like about to take a left and look at this family out there, and I'm like, it's Justin. And his son is Tate. Our older son is Tate.
Oh, cool.
So it was good to see him. I'd been in here into Sheldon. Boy, I think it was when I had a a trial in Plymouth County. And I think I just kind of went out of my way and swung through to get a meal. Got a meal with him and his, it was then his girlfriend, now his wife.
Sure.
It was fun. But he had a good time out here.
Yeah.
I just feel like I'm
jealous
that he got to like move back to Decorah and do what he's like, what he was doing. Mm-hmm. You know, that's fantastic.
Yeah. And so, I'm guessing that when you were a young man who embarked from the hills of Decorah, being an auditor was not exactly like the number one top on your list of things to do.
I did not, I mean, I'm sure I voted for the state auditor when I turned 18. I couldn't tell you who was on the ballot. In fact, I guess I don't know. In 18, that would have been 2000, so it wouldn't have been on the ballot. But yeah, I mean, 2002? I don't know. but you know.
Do you know who was auditor before you?
Yes, you got at least that much. That was Mary Mosman, and then it was Dave Vaught, and then it was Dick Johnson.
Oh, wow. What's happening to these people? Well, do they get burnout and quit?
Well, they get elected out.
Yeah, Mary had beat.
Yeah.
Okay. Dave actually got a great job working for, there's a handful of national accounting and auditing boards, and he got a sweet gig working for one of them out in Connecticut. And so he took that job.
Said, I don't have to work for the public office anymore.
That's right.
Sign me up.
I can get like, double the pay and
half the headache. Half the headache.
Yeah. But when I was at the AG's office, you know, I spent 7 years there. Most of my cases were financial cases. A huge chunk of them was public corruption. So most of the public corruption in the state I was handling. Cases like the one I had in Plymouth when I was visiting Justin, I think that was a sexually violent predator civil commitment case. I did about 24 of those too. But I worked a lot with the auditor's office. And that's how I got to know the office and got to know the folks over there. Because they would essentially do the public corruption investigation and then I would handle the prosecution. So it goes to the county attorney first. If the county attorney doesn't want it, they write a written referral to the attorney general's office. And typically they laid it on my desk.
And so that would be crimes of a certain magnitude that they didn't feel that they had the effective resources to prosecute. They'd bring in the big guns.
Yep. A, B, C felonies. So higher level felonies, more complex cases. You know, your county attorneys in Iowa are typically pretty busy. Mm-hmm. Some of them might be half time, but they're busy for half time.
Sure. Right.
And you know, it's typically run of the mill. OWIs, domestics, drug cases. And so if you have something like, we just had a report yesterday, just not too far from here in Cherokee at the at CUSO.
Right.
Yep. Where I helped a lot of residents on their way to CUSO because that's where they have the sexually violent predators. And we had an employee over there that was just cutting checks to her husband.
Right. And we heard a little bit about that. And she was clocking him in and out of shifts and was cooking the books in his favor, something $60,000 or so.
Yeah. Right about that.
And so how did you get involved with that? Does someone find the anomaly and then bring it to you? Or are you the one combing through all that to say, something's not right?
Well, so it wouldn't typically be me personally. My philosophy is that I think everybody ought to contribute to the work of the office. And so I do take an active role in some audits. If there is something that I see, I might reach out to a state entity and start asking them questions. You can read about that in the unanimous Supreme Court decision that we just got about a month ago. But with Cherokee, that'll go to the Cherokee County Attorney. And if they don't want it, they just do a written referral to the Attorney General's office. And then the AG's office says, we'll handle it. Because Cherokee County Attorney, typically, they're going to be pretty busy.
Yep.
And this is going to be a different case, more complex, not your run-of-the-mill thing. And if they don't have the resources, they just say, here you go, guys, you do it. And then, so to answer your question, I mean, look, a huge piece of what our office does is we rely on, if you see something, say something. Mm-hmm. One of the things that my predecessor, Mary Mosman, said prior to our race in 2018 was our audits are not designed to find fraud. Now, most Iowans, if you heard your state auditor say that, you'd be like, what?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Huh? Yeah. And I said, well, hold on a second. Like, we could have used that in the campaign, and I didn't, because integrity is really important to me, and I'm not gonna, that statement itself, while not like complete, also isn't unfairly inaccurate, and it shouldn't be alarming to people. Audits are, in a way, designed to find fraud. That's obviously one of the purposes. The biggest purpose is to just be there looking, because it discourages fraud. Right? Sure, if you know someone is going to come in every year, you're like, well, they're going to come in here. Probably can't. They always look at different things every year. Who knows where they're going to look? You know, so the thought doesn't even hopefully enter your mind.
Right.
And we look for fraud. We try to find fraud. But is it designed to find fraud? Again, that was a statement that she made that was just like, I'm not going to go after that. And so, yeah, most of the time it's, if you see something, say something. I'm trying to think in the case of Kuso, what specifically, I'm pretty sure that someone picked up on something at Kuso. And then there's a statute in Iowa that says, if you notice significant financial irregularities, you've got to report it to the state auditor's office. And most people usually do that if they see something.
So I'm curious, some cases, like one that comes to mind, the city of Armstrong that was relatively recent. Seemed like that went on for several years, I think, before anyone caught it. How does it get that far along before anybody notices anything or picks up on anything? I'm assuming most cities are going through a semi-regular audit process, are they not?
Most are. I think Armstrong is small enough that it was not. So cities under a certain size, and as I'm sitting here, only having had about half of my coffee and only 1.5 slices of breakfast pizza, I want to say the number is 2,000 in population. Okay. I might be wrong. It might be 1,000. But if you're under a certain size, you don't get an annual audit. You get one every 8 years. And it's a periodic exam. It's not a full-blown audit. And so in situations like Armstrong, boy, Armstrong was a mess in all kinds of ways. You could have people. I mean, this is what typically happens. People trust each other, right? Yeah. Thank goodness, because otherwise nothing works. But if you're trusting but not verifying, that's when you run into problems. And you can have people who are sitting in the same job year after year after year, robbing their neighbors of their tax dollars. And I don't know how you do that, but lots of situations we will go into where someone's been doing something for 5 years, for 8 years, for 10 years, and everyone's just like, well, that's Wayne. I don't need to look at what Wayne's doing. Wayne's honest. And Wayne is, to my knowledge, probably pretty honest, but look.
To ours, too.
Yeah.
As far as we know. But
thanks, guys.
We'd appreciate the audit, just to verify.
But any person you take and you put in the wrong set of circumstances, we're human beings. We are fallen, right? And we all experience temptation in different forms. And so you put the wrong person in the wrong place, sooner or later, something like that happens. Which is why, number one, you should be checking regularly. You should have checks and balances in place. You should be trusting but verifying. And then number two, it's why we have a criminal justice system. So that on the backside, we can say, oh, that was bad. We have to do something so that other people see that when you do this, bad things happen.
Sure. So as part of your job, and I don't know that it's necessarily a labeled part of your job, but you're actually out on tour right now.
Right.
What has kind of sparked that idea, and what do you do when you make these various stops?
You know, growing up, we had, you know, Chuck Grassley and Tom Harkin.
Yep.
And we always saw whoever the governor was, you know, come to every county. Because I grew up in Decorah. It's about as far away from Des Moines as you can get in Iowa. Rock Rapids, I think, has a beat, but I don't think that Sheldon does.
Right.
And I just figured that that's what everybody did. Turns out my predecessors did not do it. I still think it's a good thing to do. I actually think it's more important for the state auditor to do it because we actually have clients usually in all 99 counties. Mm-hmm. And so we might come out. Actually, we did Dickinson County yesterday. Dickinson County is a client. We actually do their audit. So we do about a third of the county's audits. And in doing those audits, we, interact with the county. But it's good for me to come out and be available. Sometimes I hear things about what's going on that are helpful to hear. But the other thing is, I get tips. I mean, you want to go back to, if you see something, say something. Last week, in one of my first town halls of the year, I had somebody come up and give me a letter that they had written, but they did not want to email. So they're like, here, I think you should look into this. Southeast Iowa, 2019. I had someone hand me literally like a ream of paper in a manila envelope. Like, check this out. And then like walk away.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. And actually, come to think of it, Southwest Iowa also in 2019, I had someone, it was another day like today. I didn't have anybody with me. I had someone drive with me. Because I was like, I have to go like to get to the next town hall. Do you want to just come with? I'm like, sure, I can have somebody pick me up later. And so I had somebody drive with me for like a half an hour to get to the next county seat. And they just kind of filled me in on what they were thinking about. So I think it's good to be out here because, you know, we have some oversight responsibility. We have total oversight responsibility at the state level. But we have some at the county level, local level too. And so the more we're out here, I think the more people we're going to find who are comfortable saying, oh, I didn't. Great. He's going to be here. I'm just going to go tell him.
Right. You know? Yeah. You don't know how the whatever the chain of command and how that whole deal works. But yeah, if you've got the guy.
Right. Some people will make a phone call. Some people will submit things on the internet. Some people don't want to do either of those things. But if you're here, well, go for it.
So of all the tips and stuff that you get, what percentage of them do you actually find purposeful troublemaking versus honest mistakes?
And I'll add one to that of the tips that you get. How many of them are like they're making the tip because they're mad or felt wronged by the other party?
Good questions. We have frequent flyers.
Mm-hmm. So we do.
You have them at every level, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm on the city council. And we have them too. Yes.
Yeah, right. There you go. So, I mean, we do have people who just have a bee in their bonnet about something in their town. They keep coming back and they keep coming back, and we do our best to help them understand, you know, what exactly the issue is or why the thing that they're talking about isn't an issue. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they can be led, and sometimes they can't to that understanding. Typically, if somebody's reporting something to us, usually it is pretty clear misuse, embezzlement, theft, conflicts of interest, that kind of stuff.
So I just can't, in your position, if I was in your position and every time I looked into something, I found out that someone was trying to screw somebody else or the state or out of tax dollars, are you able to go in and buy your breakfast pizza without wondering if the cashier is somehow trying to screw you out of your money? Yes. I might need to audit this transaction because everywhere I look, someone's trying to steal something.
Better not pay cash.
Yeah. Well, I go back to the idea that, you know, human beings are imperfect. A lot of people, you put them in the wrong. And I don't know about every person, but I think most people, you put them in the wrong situation. You put the wrong stressors in their life. They will do something if you give them the opportunity to do it. And so, you know, no, I don't think about that because I think the vast, even though I have literally spent a decade now, if you count my time at the AG's office and now at the state auditor's office, working on really just terrible things that people do to each other. Most people are good people. Even at the same time that most people are good people, we can also say that you take the right good person and you put them in a terrible life situation, they might do something that they aren't proud of. But no, I mean, most people in most towns at most times are doing exactly what they ought to do. But we got a lot of towns and we got a lot of people. And so if we're issuing 25 reports a year, which 20 to 25, fairly typical. That doesn't surprise me.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Build a better mousetrap. We should build a better mousetrap. They will build a better mouse. Right. So we keep doing our job. We should keep trying to figure out better ways to do this job. We should keep trying to figure out better ways to remove opportunities. And we should try to keep thinking of better ways to provide justice on the back end. But at the end of the day, like they're, you know, we are not perfectible as a species. So this will continue. The more we can reduce it, the better.
What would you say is the most difficult part of your job?
I really like my job, which is why I'm having a hard time answering that question. I'll tell you one of the things I miss. I rarely have opportunities to like really get in and concentrate on something. My time gets broken up into really little chunks. You know, like today I'm going to be like half an hour driving, hour long talk, half an hour driving, hour long talk. And with management stuff, you know, we have an office of 100 people, which I want to emphasize. There's about 100 people. Sometimes it's 90, sometimes it's 105, whatever. Really good, hardworking people in the auditor's office that are working for you guys and everybody else that's listening to this podcast every day, assuming they're in the state of Iowa. And at the end of the day, like they're the ones, not me, you know, that are coming up with that are completing the work, right? For the most part, I pitch in because I think that's important, but they're the ones that are really day in, day out doing that work. I miss the fact that I got to do that at the AG's office, to really get in and look at a case and dig into it and look at the law, maybe go to trial on it, maybe not. you know, deal with a motion to dismiss, try to fight that off. Like the ability to just kind of like concentrate and to do like some really like in-depth work, deep work, is something that I miss.
So now you're the public face of the auditor's office. You're doing these tours. What? We're talking to you. That's the morning of the 3rd, and you'll be at the Sheldon Skate Park, which was an interesting venue choice, I thought. But
you don't look like you're dressed to skate.
I am not dressed to skate. I've not been dressed to skate since approximately high school. Oh, okay. But I did skate in high school, and we're trying to do outdoor venues in this tour.
Sure. Get space.
Outdoor, yeah. Outdoor transmission of COVID almost doesn't happen.
Right.
You got to be real close to someone who has a real strong viral load for that to happen. And so we're just trying to do it in a way that makes the most people feel comfortable. I'm also just like, I like being outside.
Yeah.
Like, I always want to be outside. My neighbors when I was in law school would make fun of me because I'd always just be sitting out on the front lawn with my law book, like just chilling in the sun, doing my reading. So to me, like being outside is just what I want to do anyway. It's like bonus. Great. Sure. Mm-hmm. Like now we have a good reason to have this be outside instead of inside. Although it's going to be like 90 degrees today. So,
well, at least you're catching it. Catching Sheldon at least well before the sun gets to that level. But so what will you be talking about and what do you talk about when you make these stops?
It's a general update on what we've been up to over the year, or at least since the last one. Mm-hmm. So we did with the pandemic, you know, starting in March, we probably could have done like outdoor ones last summer. But if you remember, like last summer, people still, in terms of outdoors, weren't quite so sure as we are now. Right. Yep. And so we held off and we held off and we held off. And then finally, we just did a bunch of virtual ones, one for every county, and did them all on Zoom, which is mind-numbing for me.
Personally. I bet.
Because I'd be looking at my Zoom screen and like all these black cameras. Mm-hmm. And then I would be saying the same things over and over again for like 7 times a day.
Ugh.
And I was like, I'm not only talking to myself, I am repeating myself. I am boring myself and talking to myself. So typically what I've been talking about on these is, you know, number one, Supreme Court case we got about a month ago. Number two, our PIE program, where we're promoting efficiency at the local level. The shape of the state's budget. What else? I'm gonna have to rewrite my sticky note. I had a sticky note that was in my back pocket yesterday, and now it seems to have disappeared. And
that's all you go off of is just the sticky note.
Yeah, I just go off a sticky note.
That's a true budget conscious man.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't need the whole piece of paper.
I could have a legal pass.
Yeah. I'm big. Yeah. I mean, the paper towels get torn into halves and quarters when I'm in charge of the paper towels. Like you do not need that. Is a small spill. You can use half a piece on that one. Yeah.
So I want to ask you this, the elephant in the room here. Following you on Twitter, there's a lot of people commenting saying they're seeing that you may be looking at a possible run for governor. What are your thoughts on that? Or who knows what the future holds? Or what do you got?
And to anyone listening, it's not so much a dramatic pause as he's chewing on a piece of pizza.
Did you hear that? He really had to do some thinking.
Yeah.
No, I just ended my question right as he tore a piece off his pizza.
Literally had to lean away from the microphone so that you couldn't pick it up quite so clearly. Look, I know I want to stay in public service. You know, one of the things that attracted me to the Attorney General's office was it was public service work. And I think a combination of like my family, my upbringing and my faith and just my life in general really makes me want to be active in public service. Actually, skate park. I spent 2 years in high school in Decorah getting a skate park built there and it happened. And I haven't seen the Sheldon one, but I'm kind of excited to. I bet the one in Decorah is about the same size. But that really woke me up to the idea that government can serve everybody. Like government can work for everybody, not just, you know, one party or the other, not just insiders and outsiders. So I want to be where I can have the biggest impact. And life choices are difficult when you have more to balance. You know, we got a 4-year-old, we got a 7-year-old. I really am concerned that we now have had 5 years of unchecked power. For one party in Iowa. 5 years is a long time. And there are a number of things that have gotten done that just defy common sense, that are in no way conservative whatsoever. And so I am worried about that. But at the same time, like I said, like you asked me what the hardest thing my job was. What was your question?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the most difficult part.
Yeah, and I was like, I don't know. Like I like my job.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I like what I'm doing right now. We have young kids, and so I really do feel torn between enjoying what I'm doing and where I'm at in life versus also feeling like, man, like, where are we going here? And feeling genuine concern for where we're going in terms of how taxpayers are getting treated in Iowa, because I think they're getting the shaft in a lot of ways as well as just general public policy questions too. And honestly, I feel, because I see those people tweeting at me on Twitter too about like run for this, run for that. And so I feel that pressure too. And I just, you know, I'm trying to make up my mind, but it's there's a lot to weigh in terms of family and public service and where I can have the biggest impact.
How does when is the re-election for auditor?
22, so it's one or the other.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how so you're I guess technically a Democrat, right? That's mm-hmm. your party affiliation.
I like the way you put
technically.
That.
Technically.
Well, and this goes...
I have to put in a qualifier in Northwest Iowa. Technically, he's a Democrat.
Well, he seems like a good guy. Need the air to stay in his tires.
I do have a lot of driving to do there. I like the way you put that, though. I registered as an independent when I first registered to vote. When I was growing up, my parents were independents. My dad, I did an internship in Tom Harkin's office when I was in college. I remember my dad voted for Greg Gansky against Harkin, I think. I don't like political parties. We're not supposed to have them.
Right.
We are so... I'm keeping the bad words from coming out of my mouth here. We are so, everybody, brainwashed into this knee-jerk partisanship. And it is literally tearing us apart. Any of you guys have somebody that you just can't really talk to anymore?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. A lot of them.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's bad, right? There's a lot of different causes for it. The root cause is the idea that instead of organizing as communities around issues that need solving, we just say, throw on your blue jersey, throw on your red jersey, like this is third grade gym class, and those are the bad guys, and we're the good guys. And so it becomes very easy to just use these scare tactics, right? You look at Reynolds's tweets on Twitter, right? Or Facebook. Her Facebook posts are all about the far left is coming to get you, coming to get me. And it's like Joe Biden and AOC is like, they're federal representatives. Like, you're a state governor. No, not even close. Just using scare tactics to divide people, to try to make them scared of someone, because then they have an easier time getting reelected. And what do do that? At the end of the day, it's getting people to put on their red and blue jerseys and say, haha, we've got enough people wearing the red jersey and enough people convinced that this is sports, right? It's not. That we can just do that and then we can serve ourselves instead of actually serving the public.
Do you feel that when you start getting to that level of government, that there is more of the driving force of personal gain versus service to the constituents? I mean, so I'm on city council and, you know, some of those same things, the jersey wearing and the tactics, even on city council, I see, because they say that, you know, I proposed eliminating the ward system and going with all at large because the ward system in Sheldon just doesn't make sense for a town of 5,000 people. That's not like there's one area or another that's over or underrepresented just because we're 1.5 miles wide. So, but yeah, I got called all sorts of things, including the D word. Someone actually,
Democrat.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which
I thought you meant dumbass, but
no. No, why do you talk to my wife? But you know, and what I try to explain to these people is that, like, okay, I'm doing this out of a spirit of service. I'm making $45 a meeting. Like, I'm not doing this for personal gain.
Yeah.
And so people have asked me, like, oh, what you think of serving further? And I'm like, no, I really don't feel that. But once you get to that level, it's more of a, like, that's your business. That's your livelihood. Then suddenly you've got a lot more invested in the outcome of what happens after.
Which is why we need term limits.
Yes. 100%. Right? Yep.
I mean, you do get, because you do. I've talked to legislators where I'm like, oh. And you can just tell after a certain point, it's just like, this is a part of their identity. This is what they do. They come to Des Moines, you know, 5 months out of the year, every year. But you're not seeing them introducing bills. You're not seeing them bringing new ideas. They're just sort of like, you know, sitting there, bump on a log. And that's bad. We need people running who bring in new ideas. We need people running who want to serve, as opposed to just sort of being like, well, this is what I do. And it's like, well, that's what you've been doing. We're supposed to have turns, you know. Right. We elected Tom Harkin and Chuck Grassley for so long, right? There are literally hundreds of people in the state of Iowa that would have been great U.S. senators, right? There's smart people in every town. There's civic-minded people in every town. And there are people with good, strong values and a good backbone in every town. There's nothing magical about the people that we have in office right now. And part of the problem becomes they start to think that there's something magical about them. Or they just get really comfortable in doing what they're doing. And so we don't have term limits, and we make it really easy for them to again, just go back to divisive concepts and lying to people, right? Just outright lies. And so and that's the easier way to do it instead of actually delivering results. And then the other piece of that problem is, so often we have legislative districts or congressional districts or states where, again, all you really need to do is watch out to make sure you win your primary.
Yeah.
Can we step back for a second and talk about how un-American primaries are? This country is founded on the idea of independence.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we tell people who refuse to register with a political party, you may not assist in the selection of the candidates for the general election. That's some bullshit.
Yeah. Yep.
That's ridiculous.
Yep.
We tell those people, like, nope, you can't participate. The two-party system has so infiltrated our laws that we don't even think about it anymore, right? We're like the frog in the boiling water as it gets, as it's heating up. And so now all of a sudden we've found ourselves in an age with political violence. Right? With people ready to kill people they disagree with politically. And it's not enough to vote for people who are just saying, oh, we need to tone it down. Because the next thing out of their mouth is something divisive. We have to be supporting people who actually want to change the way the system works to force people to try to actually appeal to the mass of the public as opposed to just their party. It's not enough to just say, hey, we need to be saying, let's be nice. Let's tone it down. We need to say that. But that's not going to get us there because the structural incentives for too many people is just to appeal to their base just so that they get past their primary and they can just say screw you to half of the public.
Yeah, literally half the public.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess we better stop there because you are 5 minutes away from making your next stop and hopefully not injuring yourself at the skate park. But Rob, thank you. We appreciate you taking the time and coming up early and sitting down to chat with us.
Yeah, it was fun. Thanks for the invite.
All right. Well, next time you're back around, we'll have to do it again.
I'm game.
All right. And we'll be back with more after this. Great interview there. That's our Iowa State Auditor, Rob Sand, who was gracious enough to stop by and talk with us. And, you know, again, we kind of talked about in the open. He's somebody that we know from either Twitter or from, like, some of these landmark cases that have been dropping here lately. He referenced the Iowa Supreme Court case that had just come up, which was that the COVID one? With the COVID money, or am I misremembering that?
There was something to do with some money. Oh, I remembered about it, but basically the idea was, well, Rob Sand can't ask these questions and get answers to this because we never really did it. We were just asking him if we could do it. And then I think the Supreme Court said, no, he actually has the right to find out whether this, what you've been doing and what you're up to. But no, it was a big win for him because it was not like a 3-2 thing. It was a unanimous thing. So, yeah, and then you have, right before he came here, you have the
Cherokee deal.
Yeah, the Cherokee release where this gal was clocking her husband in and out and he got paid 50-some thousand.
Yeah, 60 grand extra.
Yeah.
And
this stuff happens all the time.
Well, you brought up Armstrong.
Armstrong,
yeah.
A town of less than 1,000 people. And I think there were 4 or 5 current and former city employees that had been involved over the years to the tune of, I think it was 100-some thousand total between all of them, which that's a lot of money no matter who you are, but especially in a town the size of Armstrong. Yeah,
so think of it as a percentage. That's got to be a huge amount of money.
So in my mind, the entire time, it was just Rob and like 2 other lawyers, accountants looking into this. No, he says 90 to 100.
To 110?
Yeah, people depending on the time of the year.
You think of, what do they say, any town over either 1,000 or 2,000. 2,000,
yeah.
has to have an annual audit. Well, how many? I mean, we got 99 counties.
But then I just saw that there's like these kids driving around. What is it? 393, I think. They were just in Sheldon either today or yesterday. And they you know, request to go to every single city. So I think it was 393. So if half of those, if even half of those are above 2,000, then look, got your work cut out for you.
And you can choose to use the state to do it, or you can have it privately done. But,
but there's a lot of things
going on. And
I mean, all roads have to lead through the auditor's office, right? Because they're the ones that have to receive the report if they're not doing the audit and taking care of all that.
Yeah, it's really, I never thought about the auditor position until Rob Sand made it as out there as he did with his use of social media.
He really did. He did make it a landmark as far as using social media. You would ask a question about, all the different auditors that had come before him, and, he made the mention that he had no idea who he voted for in 2002.
Well, I wouldn't either.
I wouldn't have a clue.
Yeah, other than Rob Sand last time, that was the last one that I would remembered voting for.
Well, usually those races, I don't know about you guys, but if I don't know who they are, and I think, the incumbent must be doing okay.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I would have heard otherwise. So I typically vote for the incumbent.
But how many people, especially in that particular, these types of situations where party affiliation should not matter, how many people are just doing the, vote down party line?
A lot.
And so it doesn't matter. You're taking the actual individual out of the equation, and you're just voting on the party, which is just, I get it, right? I understand that you feel that these parties may align, that you may align with these parties. But I think Rob made some great points about partisan politics. I think he made some great points about how divided we are because of partisan politics. He talked about, whether, do you put on your blue jersey or your red jersey, and you go out and it turns into, we lose that sense of self. That sense of individuality.
100%. And, you bring up aligning with the values, but I go back to last summer when we had the RNC in the Republican platform. The party that I typically vote for was basically, whatever Donald Trump thinks is good, then we're A-okay with that. Thumbs up, Don. I'm like, that's not a platform. And how can I say my views align with that? I don't know what the hell an individual person is going to decide on every single issue. That is literally identity politics.
Yeah.
And people on my side of the aisle love to throw that around at Democrats of playing identity politics all the time. Well, what is more identity politics than that? Than just saying, whatever our head guy says, then we're on board with that. That's literally just going along with it has nothing to do with
our figurehead.
Yeah. It's whoever the figurehead is, then I guess we all got to rally behind that. And that's just absurd, and it's stupidity.
It really is. And Aaron, you were the one of the three of us that had the stones to ask the big question.
I didn't have the stones out of the three of us, but I had a sense of time out of the three of us that we were running short, and we had to ask the question, Rob, are you going to run for governor? And it was interesting because I expected him just to kind of do the I have a job to do that the people voted me in for, and I'm going to focus on that. And that's not the answer we got. We got, I could. I want to serve. That's my thing. Where can I serve? It could be. That very well could be. And the election for auditor and governor happens the same day, so I'm going to have to figure out what I want to do. I'm going to have to decide. And that excited me, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was refreshingly honest and open and I'm not going to, I have kids at home. I'm not going to waste my time on something that probably won't happen. So I guess I better figure out how long of a shot it is.
True. And you have to look at, because obviously when you reach that level, when you're on that level, and I think someone like a Rob Sand could compete head to head with Reynolds or whomever may be on the opposing ticket, then suddenly you're part of that's that statewide name, and suddenly that becomes that has capital to it.
Mm-hmm. And I think so. If you're just a representative, well, you're pretty well known to this little piece, mm-hmm. and not known at all. Even if you're the Speaker of the Iowa House, yeah, you're still not known to the
no,
state
not to the general much. Public. No.
Well, and so I think about like Bob Vanderplaats, for example. His career went from being a high school principal to being a lobbyist, well, not a lobbyist per se, but he's head of the family leader, which is a
lobbying group.
Yeah. But yeah, and that was all, you know, and I've heard a lot of the stories of how like the inner workings of the Republican Party in Iowa, and it all goes through this one guy, and you have to be hand selected and blah 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 blah. So to see a guy like Rob take it and at least, you know, for the 45 minutes that we got to talk to him, to feel like he's genuine and mm-hmm. he really means that, well, I need to make sure I can make the most impact, and if it's there, then I'll go there, but if it's not, then I won't. Mm-hmm. Versus saying, you know, well, you know, let's see what happens. And I get it. You're gonna give the answer, right? You know, well, I'm not in it for me. I'm in it to serve and blah, 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 blah. But, you know, that we saw it with looking at the Senate election or the congressional election with Schulten and Feenstra. You know that there's so much more on the line than just, oh, my turn, next guy up. It's really setting the platform for the rest of your career. Because no matter what, you get elected to a seat like that, then you've got political ends and you've got ties that will serve you or not, depending on your personality, the rest of your life. So I would be, it would be refreshing to see someone like a Rob Sand do it. You'd want to make sure that you'd hope that he'd have the fortitude to be able to maintain that mentality of just strictly service.
And I'm curious what I wish we could have him on again for an hour. And because I would, so we dealt with what it's like to be an auditor.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now with the prospect of him possibly running for governor, I would love to know what his opinions are on things that the governor shapes and the governor has influence over, you know, because we got to what did we learn from his interview? He likes breakfast pizza.
Casey's.
He's a really easy guy to get along with. He's a good speaker and he hates fraud no matter who does it. And he's a really smart guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how much you've looked at this Twitter page. I have seen where he's sprinkled his political opinion in mm-hmm. a little bit on some of those matters. But yeah, I would like to get more in depth on that as well.
And it was very refreshing to see that he was not, you know, when I made that accusation of him being a Democrat and, you know, we all kind of chuckled, that he wasn't beholden to the party line. You know, he talked about his faith, quoted a hymn.
Yeah, that wasn't recorded. But
oh, before, was that off air?
Yeah,
oh,
that was yeah. off air. Yeah, he talked about how when he was. So, yeah, this wasn't for you, the listeners. This was for us three standing here.
Yeah.
Walking towards the door.
Doing our Dutch goodbye, which lasted about 20 minutes.
Right. Yep.
And well, he was late.
I suppose. And he said, yeah, you know, when we were in church a weekend or two ago, we sang this hymn and this line that, and then he said the line from the hymn and he said, that really struck me. And what he was talking about was his life in public service. And I thought, oh, wow. He's telling us three guys he didn't record that for the good of the listener to right. hopefully remember. Oh yeah, well, he knows who God is.
Yeah,
I'll give him a chance.
Yeah, he wasn't pandering.
Yeah. So it was a really fun interview to have. I'm so thankful we could make it work because he's staying up at the lakes. He had 3 days around here they like sent you a picture of his spreadsheet and said, when do you think
when can we shoehorn him in?
Which 10-minute segment can you squeeze into?
Yeah, and we're like, well, look at that. He's going to be in Shell. He has to be in Sheldon at 9, and the other two mornings he's starting at 8. Let's get him in at 8. And yeah, it worked. It was really cool.
Yeah, it was a fun experience, and yeah, we look forward to doing it again. Again, I think the most refreshing part was just being able to talk about just about people and not about party, and putting people over party, and then how just incredibly important that is, and we're missing that.
If you would, if you would have him talking to anybody from this county or the county to the west, listen to him talk without them knowing what party affiliation he was from, every single one of those people would say that is the man for the job. But when they go to the ballot box and they see he has a D next to his name, he is unfit for office. And to have him in here to speak with us was...
The cycle repeats. Yep.
Yeah. It. You know, it's a lot easier to vote if I just click the button that says party line. My pen won't run out.
And I'll get more into this in the next episode, but I did talk about it a little bit with Rob, that I was accused. Somebody went to one of the big movers and shakers in town and said, well, did you hear? Wayne's a Democrat. The horror! Well, first of all, no, I'm not. But second of all, so what? So what if I am?
Yeah.
What are my values?
Yeah.
How do I vote? How do I act? What motivates me?
Right.
Those are the things that should matter. Not whether or not you've got this letter behind your name. And it's just
it's if you're a good person, and I don't have to agree with you on every single thing, but if I think you're going to represent the office well and represent me and the constituents well and do a better job than the other person, why would I not want you in the job? If the other guy's an idiot, which we've had some of those races around
sure
here.
Have. Yep.
And you know what? Beats the alternative of having a flipping moron in office.
Because bottom line is, you're not going to have someone that you agree 100% with. It's just not going to happen.
No.
But when you alienate half of your of the available voting base, that's a problem.
Mm-hmm. It would be interesting to see what would happen if we would make parties illegal, where you couldn't have a party. You just had to talk about what you're for. And you couldn't talk about the other person and what they're for or what they're against. You just had to talk about what you were for and have people decide based on that. You would really have
a lot of incumbents would win on any in any race, right. I don't think.
And I hadn't what Rob Sand brought up about it's un-American to have a party system. I'd never really thought about
the primary
that.
System.
The primary
where
system.
Where you can't participate but
the,
unless you're
a member
of the
party. And then the two parties idea. I never thought about that.
Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, we get on a tirade and we get up on our soapbox and hoot and holler and people were all sorts of mad at Aaron because he was agreeing with J.D. Shulton on a lot of stuff.
Well, just because he was in the same room as him.
Oh, there yeah. Some, the yeah, fact that we had some. Given him a platform.
If he wins. All I could say to people that had that guttural reaction is I can only hope that if you listen to this podcast and you listen to the words of someone who's elected to a position that is party removed, that is only he's there because he's the best man for the job, that you would think about who you're voting for instead of what team you're voting for.
Mm-hmm.
And we may not agree at the end of the day. At the end of the day, you may not change your mind, but if you at least think about it, and if you would give it a shot. That's democracy.
Maybe it'll at least change your mind on the way you approach every single thing that person does. Because we're right now we're in a society where, well, if it's my guy, then I'm for it. Doesn't matter if I was against it last week. He's for it now, so I'm for it. Because got an R behind his name or got a D behind his name.
And, the right color shirt.
Yep. He brought up the point, you know, how many people do you talk to that you can't talk to anymore because of this divisiveness that how dare you? How dare you be for the other team?
And refuse to call out hypocrisy on their side because, well, at least they're better than the other guys. At least they're better than them. Well, no, if you're a lying shitbag, I don't care which letters behind your name.
You're still a lying shitbag.
Yep. Sorry.
And that sounds like a happy note to end the podcast.
Come back for the next one.
I want to thank our guest, Rob Sand, and hope that we'll be able to have this chat sometime again.
Today's episode of the DBA Pod is brought to you by Gettings Garden in Sanborn. It's strawberry time in Northwest Iowa, and it's time to get your fix at Gettings. New this year, check out Gettings Backyard with rides and games for all ages. Bring the family and spend the entire day at Gettings Garden. Opening dates and more information can be found on their website, gettingsgarden.com.
And you can learn more about the pod and just who the heck we think we are by hitting us up, getting in touch with us. Some combination of those words on social media. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, all at DBA Pod. And coming soon, in a laughable amount of time, to a website near you, dbapod.com. And until next time, we'll see you.